a lot of money. I'm going to Puerto Rico on Tuesday.
Donald Trump, highly criticized by many friends for occupying himself with attacks on the NHL and bend-the-knee protests over the last days, today addressed the crisis in Puerto Rico, suffering devastating effects from Hurricane Maria and before that from Hurricane Irma. Trump says he will visit the island next week, the earliest he said he can go without disrupting recovery operations, that for now attention is on flights onto the island with equipment and supplies. Trump.
The mayor of San Juan was very generous and very nice this morning, was thanking us for the great job we've done with FEMA that we really have. We've worked very, very hard in Puerto Rico. It's very tough because it's an island. In Texas, we can ship the trucks right out there and, you know, we can do, we've gotten A pluses on Texas and on Florida, and we will also on Puerto Rico. But the difference is this is an island sitting in the middle of an ocean, and it's a big ocean. It's a very big ocean. And we're doing a really good job. I want to go there. Tuesday seems to be the first time we can do without really disrupting first responders and the efforts that are being made to help people. We have shipped massive amounts of food and water and supplies to Puerto Rico, and we are continuing to do it on an hourly basis.
Critics say Trump administration efforts have fallen short of efforts in Texas and Florida after storms there. In Puerto Rico, many of the 3.4 million residents are without enough food, water, and fuel. Flights off the island are infrequent, communications spotty, and roads clogged with debris. On a positive note, though, Homeland Security today says 35% of cell phone towers are back up. Trump spoke to reporters at the White House after a meeting of the House Ways and Means Committee to discuss tax reform. He repeated what he's been saying about taxes, that they are way too complicated, and he says he'll announce a new plan on Wednesday. And then Trump spoke on the lack of Republican votes for the Cassidy Graham health care bill.
We were very disappointed by a couple of senators, Republican senators, I must say. We were very disappointed that they would take the attitude that they did. We don't know why they did it, but we'll see what happens. I mean, you know, it's going along, and at some point there will be a repeal and replace. But we'll see whether or not that point is now or will it be shortly thereafter. But we are disappointed in certain so-called Republicans.
Republican senators Trump referred to are Senators Susan Collins, John McCain, Rand Paul, and Ted Cruz. They say they can't support the Cassidy Graham bill. Maine's Susan Collins points to massive Medicaid cuts, which she says would put health care at risk for some of our most vulnerable citizens. By Tuesday afternoon, GOP sources say the Senate won't vote this week on the bill. As of now, there are more than enough Senate GOP opponents to kill the repeal of Obamacare. And last night, the CBO, the Congressional Budget Office, weighed in on the Cassidy Graham bill. It says it would reduce health insurance coverage for millions of people. Senate Democrats say they are ready to work on a bipartisan effort. This weekend, as Stevie Wonder took both knees in support of the Bend a Knee protests nationwide, he also expressed support for Jimmy Kimmel, the late-night ABC host who has been outspoken in his outrage over the Republican repeal Obamacare bill, which would deny coverage for many with pre-existing conditions. Stevie Wonder at the Global Citizens Festival over the weekend sang this one for all children and for Jimmy Kimmel's child born with a heart condition in need of multiple surgeries.
For every wonderful child, every young baby boy, baby girl, again, Jimmy Kimmel, this is for your child, from me. Let's sing it. Are y'all ready? Let's go. Yeah.
Global Citizen Festival over the weekend in Central Park with a song for the children he dedicated to his daughters and to Jimmy Kimmel's child. The ABC comedy host instrumental in speaking out against the Cassidy Graham GOP attempt to repeal and replace Obamacare. And you're listening to the news on listener-sponsored non-commercial Pacifica Radio. This is WBAI in New York. Turning to Dreamers. Last night, House Democrats announced an effort to force Republican leaders to bring the DREAM Act to a vote. They started a discharge petition. It requires the signatures of 218 House lawmakers to force a vote on the bill. While the tactic often doesn't succeed, Democrats say they believe it could work this time. House Democratic Whip Steny Hoyer.
This discharge petition is because of a process that says if the majority of the members of the House are for something, it ought to come to the floor. We had 42 Republicans sign the discharge petition for the Ex-Im Bank. But when it came to the floor, 127 Republicans voted for that bill. And as I said, every Democrat. We believe that will happen if this bill comes to the floor. We urge, as so many have said, that the Republicans who are for the Dreamers, who are for the DREAM Act. As a matter of fact, there's one bill that's sponsored by more Republicans than necessary to get this bill discharged.
New York Representative Adriano Espaillat says the discharge petition is the first step in the road to bringing back stability to the 800,000 DACA recipients, Dreamers in the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program. For Espaillat, the DREAM Act is personal.
Just to know the magnitude of it, there are more DACA recipients than any constituencies in any one of our congressional districts. So it will be as though an entire congressional district will be subject to deportation. So my grandparents came here in the 50s, my maternal grandparents. I got to know them here in New York. My grandfather worked in Joe Crowley's district, or Grace Mann's district in Prince Street. In a factory. He would get up at 5 o'clock in the morning, keep his head down, work there all his life. My grandmother worked in Jerry Nadler's district and in the garment district. She was also a factory worker. She worked there all her life. They weren't able to see me as sent to Congress, but I'm here for them today to support this discharge petition. And today we circulated a letter, a bipartisan letter, with 99 members asking for DACA recipients to be allowed to reapply until a legislative solution is found for this issue. That's not necessary if this discharge petition moves forward and it is embraced by both sides of the aisle. Finally, last week, myself and Congress members Grijalva and Gutierrez engaged in an act of civil disobedience in front of Trump Tower. We did not do this because it was popular or it was nice to do. We did it because we know firsthand that the only way you would change America in a civil rights issue, it happened for a woman's right to vote, it happened for the civil rights of African Americans, and it also happened for people to be able to marry anybody they love, is to change the hearts of our nation, to have the public sentiment on our side. We have that already, but we will continue to push forward until we find a legislative solution that starts today with this discharge petition.
Steny Hoyer says there is bipartisan support for the DREAM Act, that it's the number one priority for House Democrats, and that the clock is ticking. That's because in rescinding DACA, Trump gave Congress 6 months to come up with a solution. And Dreamers so far have been given October 5th as a deadline to re-enroll in the program.
As you can imagine, this is a very terrifying time for the 800,000 people that we know as DACA recipients or Dreamers.
There's no time to waste, says Texas Representative Joaquin Castro.
Their futures, their livelihoods, and oftentimes their families are at stake. And over the past 5 years, I've often heard colleagues of mine often conservatives, Republicans, say that they agree with the spirit of DACA, but they just didn't like that it was done by executive order, that it should have been done legislatively. This is the time to act and do something through the Congress. I was reading the news earlier, and I saw that, I believe, a statistic from The Hill, and Raphael's here, and he can correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that it said that 86% of Americans support the Dreamers staying in the United States. And the question I wondered about after seeing that is, how many Americans does it take to get this Congress to act? The time for action is now. Over the past few weeks, since the president announced this, there have also been some colleagues of ours who have said that in concept and made vague references to supporting the Dreamers and supporting a DACA solution. Now is the time that we demand and that constituents demand that everybody who makes that statement put their name, hopefully, to this discharge petition, but put their name to a piece of legislation. This is not something that can go on for 2 years or 5 years or to infinity the way some issues in this Congress do and really never get solved. There is a very finite window to stop the deportation of 800,000 people. So the time for talk is over. This requires action. And so I proudly will join my colleagues, Democrats, and hopefully some Republicans, who will sign the discharge petition.
Meanwhile, members of Congress are trying to extend that October 5th deadline to re-enroll in the DACA program. House Minority Speaker Nancy Pelosi says Dreamers need more time.
I just want to acknowledge that Congresswoman Lujan Grisham, the chair of the Congressional Hispanic Caucus, Congresswoman Lucille Robles-Allard and Congressman Luis Gutierrez sent a letter asking for an extension of the time from October 5th. And I spoke and called the acting secretary of Department of Homeland Security today, endorsing that request and asking for a three-month extension. In their letter and in our calls, and all of us are weighing in on this, we're talking about the fact that it was only 1 month that they gave. No, but 1 month that they gave to re-up.
Oh, yes.
In other words, when the president made his declaration, it was until October 5th that you had to re-enroll. And that's just not enough time. Especially when you don't have, shall we say, the outreach that it would be necessary to do that. And so all over the country, we've been talking and listening to Dreamers about extend the time, help with some of the resources. It's $495. Could you do that on a dime? That's a lot of money for a Dreamer, a young Dreamer, to have to come up with, A. And then third of all, there's some legal assistance that is needed so that people do fill out the forms correctly and the rest. So we want to be able to have them have the 3 months. I wish they could have the whole 6 months, but we're asking for 3 months for them to do that. And we would hope that we could pass this bill by October 5th, and that would be a wonderful thing. But we certainly will pass it before we leave here, and we need that three-month period for them to do that. So that we have made a complete official request to the Department of Homeland Security to give the Dreamers that additional time. Because from the president's announcement to 1 month later, Harvey, Irma, Maria, wildfires, and the rest, in addition to just the challenges of the bureaucracy between now and then.
Pelosi is using her leverage to keep relief for Dreamers in the spotlight. This after securing support from Donald Trump to protect young immigrants brought to the U.S. as children, while also bolstering border security. The National Partnership of New Immigrants, which includes Make the Road New York, also approached Homeland Security. This to extend the deadline for DACA recipients to re-enroll in the program. In a letter they sent today, they say the deadline is arbitrary, unworkable, and cruel, and will result in tens of thousands of current Dreamers losing their legal status, protections from deportation, and ability to work legally and contribute to the nation. Meanwhile, three GOP senators unveiled their own proposed solution to helping young immigrants brought into the country as children. Their bill would offer those who came into the country below the age of 16 a pathway to remaining permanently. For two consecutive five-year stints, they would have to meet various requirements, namely maintain a job, earn a degree, or serve in the military. pay their taxes, and follow the law. After that decade-long period, they could apply for a green card. The bill's co-sponsors say they didn't envision their bill as a standalone measure. It would have to be combined with other efforts to secure the border. Senator Orrin Hatch, a Republican of Utah, an original supporter of the DREAM Act legislation, is being pursued by Democrats. But he says he's joining with Republican Senator Tom Tillis of North Carolina and Senator James Lankford of Oklahoma. He says that's because their bill has the best shot at passing. Hatch said, frankly, these are young people who have a real ability to contribute to our society. In many cases, in most cases, they're educated by us. In many cases, they don't even know their former lands from which their parents came. They only know the United States of America. Senator Orrin Hatch. Turning to Yemen. As the Trump administration continues to back the Saudis in their war on Yemen, and as it bars its refugees from entering the United States, the humanitarian crisis there continues to grow. The UN coordinator for Yemen, Jamie McGoldrick, says the health system and the economy have collapsed, seriously jeopardizing people's ability to survive.
The fact is that Yemen hasn't changed. It's only gotten worse, and every day gets grimmer and grimmer for the people of that country. The average citizen there struggles to survive, struggles to feed its family, struggles to get health services, struggles to get water. And that's why cholera is such a massive outbreak, 650,000 people affected and over 2,200 people dead. And that's happened in under 5 months. So that's the situation. That's a manifestation of total collapse of health, of water, of the economy, and people's ability to survive.
McGoldrick is in New York from Yemen to bring awareness about the situation over there to the U.S. He says it's difficult to get media into Yemen and to generate momentum for political change.
I mean, basically, we're there to tell the story. We're there, we bear witness to the suffering they have there. We've got to transmit that back here and tell member states and people responsible, the belligerents, the parties to the conflict, those people supporting, those who can influence them, to tell them enough is enough. To say that, you know, the suffering should not be the DNA of the people in that country. And suffering they've had since the last 2.5 years. And it's beyond them. They can't turn it off. They can't stop the war. For a Yemeni in Yemen, it's a very tough existence. Every day is a grind. You wake up, you don't know how you feed your family tomorrow. You don't know how you're going to pay for the rising price of fuel, for medicines, for food. One in four don't have any purchasing power. And so it's misery. I would not like my two daughters to grow up in that environment because it's not nice, it's not effective, it will not go anywhere except in a very sad place.
Besides asking for continued financial support and reiterating the importance of international humanitarian law, McGoldrick says it's essential to just stop the war. In other news, here in New York, former New York State Senate leader Dean Skelos and his son have been granted new trials in their corruption case. A federal appeals court said the jury was wrongly instructed. That's in light of a recent Supreme Court ruling narrowing the definition of what it takes to convict a public official. Prosecutors say they'll retry the case. Dean Skelos's lawyer, Alexandra Shapiro, says he looks forward to the next steps. Prosecutors say the Republican politician strong-armed three companies into giving his son Adam Skelos $300,000. Father and son were convicted in 2015 of extortion, conspiracy, and bribery in one of a series of corruption cases. Skelos was sentenced to 5 years in prison. His son got 6.5 years. Both remain free on appeal. The same court reversed former Democratic New York State Assembly Speaker Sheldon Silver's corruption conviction 2 months ago. It cited the same Supreme Court ruling which narrowed the definition of a corrupt act. Now Senator Bob Menendez of New Jersey is looking to use the same loophole in his bribery and fraud trial, now in its fourth week. And finally, the Associated Press is reporting that Bob Woodward and Carl Bernstein say the new film about former FBI official Mark Felt overstates the importance of their famed Watergate source, Deep Throat. Woodward and Bernstein object most strenuously with the title of the movie, Mark Felt, the Man Who Brought Down the White House. Felt was an important source, they say, but one of dozens who played important roles in untangling Watergate. In a letter sent to director Peter Landesman, Woodward and Bernstein implored him to change the title. The film, they say, distorts Felt's role. Felt, who died in 2008, revealed himself in 2005 as the Washington Post reporter's source. He was at the time of the Watergate investigation the FBI's number 2 ranking official. And that's some of the news for Tuesday, September 26, 2017. Linda Perry, WBAI News, New York.